right, welcome to the Young Turks. Huge show ahead for you guys. As usual, we will attack the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, Trump. We will hold all of them accountable for a number of different things, including Bernie Sanders with a great quote, Nancy Pelosi with a disastrous quote. I'll share that with you guys in a little bit. I will also have Nunez, who was on Trump's transition team, breaking every kind of etiquette there is. That's later in the program. I'm putting it very politely by saying etiquette. Then Trump and the Russians. Yes, there is more information. Yes, it's real. I will give you more on that, including yet another person who was investigating the Russian government, who happened to fall out of or be thrown out of a building, and the absurd, comical excuse the Russian government gave for that horrific situation. And oh, by the way, just to add a cherry on top, in the second hour, the Republicans in the Senate just voted to take away your internet privacy. So you might want to know exactly what they're up to. That's going to come up a little bit later in the program. But you know what we got to do first? You know what we got to do first. Okay, so we have been, okay, there we go. So we've been doing a campaign to hire journalists and have them be real watchdogs, watchers on the wall. Not guardians of the galaxy, but guardians of democracy. And you guys have been amazing. We were trying to reach a million, we did. We said at every 500,000, we'd hire new folks, we did. So we went past a million, yes, even though there were doubters, okay? And we were trying to get now to 2 million so we could hire at every level. Well, the next level, of course, after 1 is 1.5 million when we'd have to announce new hires. Yesterday, I asked you guys to chip in to get us above 1.5 million. You did so in dramatic form. So now we are ready for the announcements. First, let me tell you where you can hire more reporters. TYTnetwork.com/go. And when you look at that, you see that, in fact, of course, we have passed 1.5 million. Thanks to you guys. Now, we're at 1.507. And first, let me just say, nice work, a great accomplishment. Thank you guys. Now, of course, as I've done in previous rounds, you get to find out who you hired. This is the fun part. Here comes the first one. Go ahead.
You know, you asked me earlier, you know, why have you been in independent media? Why has that been kind of the anchor of your career? And I think if you look at traditional legacy media, what you often see is coverage that writes money almost completely out of the story.
Yep.
You see these stories about, you know, Hillary said this, or Obama did this, or Trump did this, or whatever, and it's all about the personal intrigue and the kind of gossip and gamesmanship, and stripped out of the story is actually, well, what moneyed interests are paying which political actors to shape which specific provisions that serve those moneyed interests. That is not often part of the story. The independent media is one of the only places where you can do that and cover it in a serious way.
David Sirota, one of the Young Turks. It's been a long time coming. Uprising, welcome home. And for a long time, I've called David, oh, here we go again. I've called David the Uprising because that's the title of his second book. He wrote The Hostile Takeover, The Uprising. He continues to be a great, great reporter at the International Business Times. He will be a contributor on The Young Turks. He's written for New York Times, Politico, Harper's, Wired, Nation, Salon. The list goes on and on. He's broken tremendous stories on what they're doing with our pensions, all the different scandals of Chris Christie, and the list goes on and on. Great journalism background, and now a contributor to The Young Turks. I couldn't be more proud, and great to have him on. And you know, that is a piece of an interview I did with him that you can check on out on youtube.com/TYTinterviews very soon. Now, let's go to the second hire. Now, this time around, normally we do two. This time we're doing three. There is a bonus. So I think you're going to love the next two folks as well. Now, for the next person, let me give you a little bit of background. Okay, first of all, let me show you who it is. It's Jonathan Larson. And Jonathan Larson is going to now be the managing editor of TYT Politics and the executive producer of TYT Politics. And so Sirota's more outward facing, and so is the third guy, as you'll see in a second. You'll certainly recognize the third person. Now, you might say, Jonathan, you might not recognize because he's largely behind the scenes. Well, what has he done? Well, his resume is a progressive dream. So he's worked, first of all, yes, in lots of roles as producer, reporter, and uncovered many stories, including in the mainstream media on ABC, Good Morning America, CNN, Anderson Cooper 360. But also, if you're a progressive, get a load of this. He's worked on The Daily Show. He's worked on Morning Sedition on Air America with Mark Maron and Rachel Maddow. He was a high-level producer at Countdown with Keith Olbermann. When I filled in for Olbermann, Jonathan and I briefly worked together. And then he created Up with Chris Hayes. Now, if you're progressive and you watch Up with Chris Hayes, so of course two people directly responsible for that, Chris Hayes and Jonathan Larson. And if you liked, if you're an upper and you liked what that program did, smart, progressive, thoughtful programming, you're gonna love what Jonathan Larson is gonna do here at the Young Turks. So he is going to coordinate all of our reporters, all of our contributors. And look, I can go on and on about all the different stories he's broken, but he broke the story of the politicization of the Bush Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, Phil Gramm's role, dual role in lobbying for Wall Street while working for the McCain campaign as their top financial advisor, and of course asking them to deregulate as he has done in the past while working for Wall Street. He's talked about the massive global companies that stood to benefit from so-called small business tax cuts. So now I talked to him as well. You'll also see that interview on youtube.com/2ITinterviews. But I want to give you a snippet of that as well to give you a sense of how Jonathan was in the building in mainstream media in a lot of ways and saw some of what was going wrong and how we can fix it. Here's a small part of that interview.
What is a quote from Hunter S. Thompson where he talks about them being like fuck offs and misfits and outsiders and losers? And it's like, you know, the people who would be at the window of the White House Correspondents Association dinner saying, you guys suck, as opposed to being inside eating the food. And so if you're—
we've lost that completely.
If you're happy and wealthy beyond any financial concerns in your life whatsoever, why would you be worried about money in politics, you know?
Totally.
But the other factor, I think, is that if they don't, if they're concerned that they don't know how to do the story well, I think people underestimate the CYA dynamic there, which is that every decision they make, like everyone says how ratings driven TV is, which sort of begs the question of, well, what drives ratings? And to a large extent, the answer is we don't know, right?
Well, I was about to ask you that as the next question.
Uh-huh. Which means when they make their decisions about what to do, they want to make sure that they have an explanation for why they did it when it fails. Like most of these decisions are driven by, will I have a good explanation for when it fails?
Well, of course, we're not going to operate like that. We are going to drive for success. We define success as doing actual investigative reporting. You'll see that on youtube.com/TYTpolitics. All of our reporters, the ones we've hired in the past, the ones you've hired in the past, and including these guys, will be driven to break stories, stick to the facts, but also be passionate about the news and about the world around us. And you can do both of those things and deliver great news. One little last fun fact about Jonathan Larson, he also wrote two Batman stories for DC Comics. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better. All right, now let me show you the final third bonus, new contributor to the Young Turks. Get a load of this guy.
We owe $70 trillion.
I understand that, but
those due to walk out
say,
a $4 trillion solution, which is basically just a way for the Democrats to avoid dealing with this until 2017. I'm not here to talk about plans to deal with this till 2017. I'm saying we've got a real problem, and I'm tired of Republicans and Democrats who either want Republicans who want to burn the place to the ground, and Democrats, with all due respect, who want to offer a plan that gets it through the their end of their second term of their presidency, and then screws me and my kids when it's over.
Oh, here comes Dylan Radigan off the top rope. I love it. Dylan Radigan, contributor to the Young Turks. Long time coming, brother. Long time coming. So I'm going to show you an old clip of him hosting TYT in the past. But of course, he's a New York Times bestselling author on sustainability and and of course about the financial misdealings. His book was Greedy Bastards. He's founder of Helical Holdings. He's a sustainability entrepreneur in that role. He's worked for, at Bloomberg, CNBC, MSNBC. At CNBC, he co-hosted Closing Bell, and he created Fast Money, two of their most successful shows. Now, he left CNBC when he realized, hey, you know who created the mess, the financial mess we're in? The bankers. Yes. At MSNBC, he was there for 3 years. He actually brought me on to MSNBC. It was the first time I ever filled in for anybody, was for Dylan Radigan. And he has always seen ahead and seen clearly, and he has always held government officials, Republicans, Democrats to account. So when people saw him raging on air like that, well, it went viral, but some in polite circles and in mainstream media thought, tut, tut, you're not supposed to do that on there. I saw that and I thought, that's my kind of guy. I love it. Now, this is Dylan back when he filled in for me on the Young Turks many years ago.
Now, what people probably don't know about me, and it's my own fault, because when I go on camera so often, I'll be all worked up, throwing pens like that, all worked up. People are like, that guy's just all worked up, which is true. I am all worked up. But when I go to bed at night, when I wake up in the morning, and when I think about the work that I'm doing, Cenk's doing, anybody who's basically stepping into the breach that you're doing with the Pope, with everybody here, that the people that I work with do every day, the fact that we're able to do it is unbelievable. No other country in the world has a press like that, a vote like that, the ability to spend its money the way that we do. We're in a post-feudal era, and the robots haven't taken over yet. As far as I can see, if we get efficient government, discover free energy, we'll be good to go.
Now Young Turk's good to go. How is that for a power lineup? In fact, let me show you the whole lineup here. So as you take a look at all these guys, all I can think of is... Now, you hired every single one of these guys. Jordan Chariton was the first guy hired, basically built TYT Politics. And we hired him because you guys were members and joined at tytnetwork.com/join. And then we started this new campaign. We were able to hire Naomi Const from Sirius Satellite Radio. She now works for us as a reporter. Sean King from the Daily News. Then Jonathan Larson, and of course Ryan Grimm, Washington bureau chief of Huffington Post. David Sirota at International Business Times. Michael Tracy used to be at Vice. Now he's with us as an investigative reporter. And Dylan Radigan now as a contributor. I mean, look at that lineup, all hired by you guys. Thank you. And now it's our turn, and we got to deliver for you guys. So already a lot of those guys have broken huge stories. Jordan broke the Donna Brazile story. He was at Standing Rock first. He was there the longest. He went back the most amount of times. He broke the lead story in Indiana. Nomi covered the DNC chair race like no one else. Interviewed every single person in that race. Held them to account. Exposed what the DNC consultants are doing. Ryan Grimm interviewed Elizabeth Warren right after the Republicans tried to quiet her and have her not read the letter in the Senate. I've told you all the stories that Sirota's broken, Larson's broken. You know about Radigan. Michael Tracy covering the Democratic town halls better than almost anyone out there. Sean King covering stories of justice and injustice. I love these guys. Thank you guys for making this happen. If you thought the stories they've already broken are great, well, we're at the tip of the iceberg. We've got so much more to cover, all thanks to you. We built this together. Now let's go do roll up our sleeves and do even more great work together. All right, we'll be right back with the rest of the news today. Welcome back to the Young Turks. I will read your tweets a little bit later in the program, but we got a lot of stuff to get to. So let me go ahead and talk about Donald Trump and the Democrats in this segment. And then later, Trump versus the Koch brothers. Who won? That's a big battle royale. And it's a super interesting story. That's going to be the next segment. And we found out who did the London terror attacks. I'll also talk about that as well. Now, let me give you a story about regret. Now, Donald Trump's been in office for only a couple of months now, and already some of his supporters are regretting their decision. Why? Since they're conservatives, they seem to lack all empathy. They only care when it affects them. So, we've had a number of those stories out there. Now, before I give you the next one, though, I do want to give you perspective. So for a while, Donald Trump really held his own supporters really well. He's at 45% approval. For a new president, that is disastrous numbers, but relatively near where he came in the first place. And so despite all the stories about Russia and the travel bans and all the different messes, he was holding steady. A recent report came out and said he's lost 3.5% of his own supporters. To me, that's not a big number. And if you wanted to, you could frame it, and they never bothered to ask the question of how many of his own supporters did Obama lose, did Clinton lose. I never even saw that about Bush. So I'm just giving you full context here. Now, at the same time, lately I have seen his poll numbers slipping more significantly, down to 39, and then in a Gallup poll down to 37. So I think he is beginning to lose some of his supporters, only because finally, and we're only 2 months in, some of his actions are actually affecting them. The Russian story, the travel ban doesn't affect them necessarily, if it touches them. But Trump care, if that goes into effect, is going to affect a lot of them, and also immigration. So that's the story we go to in Indiana. There's a woman named Helen Bearstein. In fact, let's go to Law News and they explain her situation. She's a vocal supporter of President Donald Trump. She said in the past that she voted for the president because she agreed with an immigration policy that he promoted. Now, as her husband is about to be deported, oops, her family's on the wrong side of a system she thought would spare them. But why? Helen, why did you think it would spare you? So this is what's so frustrating. They thought, we're the good ones, we're not the bad ones. How many times have we seen that in history? As they continue to explain now, however, after more than a decade of ICE check-ins went by without a problem, and roughly 2 months after Trump took office, Roberto is being deported. So just quick background here to explain. He came in as an undocumented immigrant in the late 1990s. They set up a family here, they set up a business here in Indiana. Yes, their conservative neighborhood likes them, the local government likes them because they're also conservative. But he is undocumented. And he did have one slip up where he went to Canada for Niagara Falls. When coming back, he had to check in, and then they realized he was undocumented. So for years, he has then gone back and reported into ICE. And for all that time, he didn't have trouble until now. So let me tell you more about that. Since Roberto remained in the country instead of voluntarily deporting himself, ICE then had the authority to take him into custody. When ICE stumbled upon this incident in February of this year, they did just that and sent him from his home in Granger, Indiana, to a detention facility in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He is set to be deported on Friday. That's tomorrow. Now, they got kids, they got a lot of people who work for them, they got a community who likes them. Sad day, he's in a detention facility, and tomorrow he's gone, and he can't ever come back. His wife voted for Trump, thinking, no, he was only going after the bad guys, not the good guys like us. You think he was going to make that distinction? But they do, they always think it's not going to affect me, it's for the other people. And oftentimes in cases like this, the other minorities, the bad ones, not the good ones. In fact, she almost literally says that. But first, let me go to a quote from nearby South Bend, Indiana mayor. He says, he's led an exemplary life and quote, without so much as a traffic ticket against his name. In other words, he was one of the good ones. We meant the other ones were the criminals and the rapists. Okay, and now back to the wife. She said, Trump did say the good people would not be deported. The good people would be checked. So you believed him. And by the way, not only did you believe him when you thought he was going to make that distinction and that he wasn't targeting everyone in your category, that was a huge mistake. When other people warned you about that mistake, you didn't listen to them. Oftentimes you scoffed at them. Now your husband's going to get deported. And the other part of it that's actually really gets under people's skin is, what do you mean the good ones versus the bad ones? What do you know about the bad ones? What stereotype have you listened? Does that mean that there are no immigrants in this country that are bad guys have committed crimes? Of course there are. Everybody knows that. Nobody's naive about that. But you thought he was only going to go after them? He said in the beginning that he was going to stop it all. He told you over and over again. And every once in a while, he would tell you pretty little lies about, no, don't worry about it, it's not going to affect you. Oh, when I destroy healthcare, it's not, you know, don't worry, I'll cover everyone. It'll be fantastic, I'll cover them bigly, it'll be tremendous. Your premiums will be lower and everyone will be covered. Now you come to find out 25 million people are going to lose their health insurance. Oops. Now you come to find out, no, he's going to deport everyone he can, including, yes, your husband. Now, it's a super sad story. They explain finally at Law News, in addition to Helen, Roberto will be leaving behind 4 daughters and 20 employees. Look, we warned you not because we had bad intentions and we were trying to trick you. We warned you because we knew what he was going to do, and you didn't seem to get it. Now that it affects you, you apparently get it. Look, I don't know how to feel about this story. I'm torn. Yes, I got to be honest, there's a part of me that thinks, well, you had it coming. You voted for him, you put him in place, and he kicked out your husband. Well, you did that. You did that. Now, but at the same time, it breaks my heart to tell her that. And those 4 daughters didn't have it coming. It wasn't their fault. And now they don't have a dad anymore. He's been deported. So I want to ask you guys. We're doing a poll on it. It's at tytnetwork.com/remorse. And I am genuinely curious which ways you guys are going to vote on this. Should we have sympathy for a Trump voter whose husband is being deported? In the newsroom, everybody was totally split on this. Half the people were screaming, no sympathy, none. And the other half were like, I don't know if we should even do this story. I feel so bad for her. Well, everyone agrees, we feel bad for the kids, we feel bad for the husband. But the question is, do you feel bad for the person who voted for Trump that put this into action and now her husband is gone? TYTnetwork.com/remorse. Curious to see what happens, and I'll report back to you guys on the results tomorrow. All right, now let me go into another Trump story. Donald Trump does an interview with Time magazine. They question him about a number of different stories that he's told that don't seem to add up. And he has a number of excuses, and they are comical. The last one is the best one, when, as usual, he appears to be a complete and utter child. So don't miss that one. But let me go through them all because they're all fun. So they ask him, hey, Jay, you said Obama wiretapped you. The head of the FBI, James Comey, just came out and publicly and on the record said he did not wiretap you. How do you feel about that? He says, I have articles saying it happened. You're the president now. You can't just be a conspiracy theorist listening to Breitbart, InfoWars, etc. You have all the intelligence community at your disposal. You can't say, I'm not going to use my intelligence community. I have articles saying it happened. Okay, now if that's the only thing he said, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And by the way, there's a Guardian article that had said that there was a warrant that they asked for but did not receive at Trump Tower. Now, but you go on. Then they ask him, hey, that crazy story you had about how Ted Cruz's father was part of the assassination of JFK. I mean, you got to take that one back, right? No, he goes back to the same article thing. He says, that was in a newspaper. No, no, I like Ted Cruz, he's a friend of mine. Excuse me, guys. But that was in the newspaper. I didn't say that. I was referring to a newspaper. A Ted Cruz article referred to a newspaper story with, had a picture of Ted Cruz, his father, and Lee Harvey Oswald having breakfast. You want to know what that newspaper story was? It's from the National Enquirer. Furthermore, Donald Trump is notorious for planting stories in the National Enquirer. So I have articles. We have a president who doesn't rely on his FBI, NSA, or CIA. He relies on the National Enquirer and insane websites like InfoWars that say that the Sandy Hook massacre was a false flag operation, possibly orchestrated by the Democrats. There's some chance the president is insane. Okay. Then they say, hey, your poll numbers are dropping. Isn't that a point of concern for you? So this cuts two different ways. This is very interesting. So he says, the country believes me. Hey, I went to Kentucky two nights ago. We had 25,000 people in a massive basketball arena. There wasn't a seat. They had to send away people. Okay. Now, the reason this goes two different ways is that he truly believes this. And he thinks the fervor of his own supporters equals the number of supporters, which is not the case. But he won the presidency, so he thinks, ha, I knew it. I saw the big crowds and I'm a child and I thought that equals that I'm going to win. But it turns out in his case, he did win. So he feels totally vindicated. Now, I'm going to tell you though, that is a giant political mistake. Because if you're overconfident because you happen to beat one of the most unpopular people to ever run for president, and you mistake the passion of your own supporters for the breadth of supporters you have overall in the country, you are going to run into an iceberg and you're going to hit it really hard. So if he thinks, oh, I got this and my 37% approval rating are fake numbers, great, keep on believing that. Let's see how the next election turns out. Okay, he says now about the conspiracy theory that 3 million people voted illegally for Hillary Clinton. He says, if you take a look at the votes, when I say that, I mean mostly they register wrong. In other words, for the votes, they register incorrectly and or illegally. And they then vote. You have tremendous numbers of people. In fact, I'm forming a committee on it. We'll see after the committee. I have people say it was worse, was more than that. Always, I have people who say it was more than that. Who's your people? Who are these articles? Who are your sources? Again, is it people in the intelligence community? You're the president of the United States. You have access to all that. Is there someone in the government saying, oh my God, President Trump, yes, 3 million people voted illegally? No, it's another kook who, by the way, we found out was registered in three different states. That's not illegal, but that's among the things he says is, oh yeah, that will show you that people voted illegally. It's a kook. He has no evidence. It's another right-wing conspiracy theorist. The president believes in lunatics. Okay. Now, is it your fault that you have all these horrible stories going around? No, the buck never stops with Trump. He says, it wasn't me, it wasn't me, it was Obama. So he says, I inherited a mess. I inherited a mess in so many ways. I inherited a mess in the Middle East, a mess in North Korea. I inherited a mess with jobs. Despite the statistics, you know, my statistics are even better. But they're not the real statistics because you have millions of people that can't get a job, okay? And I inherited a mess on trade. In other words, it wasn't me, daddy, it wasn't me, it's not my fault. You didn't know that coming in that the presidency was going to be a tough job and that North Korea was going to be a challenge? You didn't know that? So now you want to blame everything on Obama? Well, Obama didn't create your travel ban. He didn't make you work with the Russians. He didn't make you hire Mike Flynn and then fire Mike Flynn for working with the Russians. He didn't make you hire Paul Manafort, who we now know because of an Associated Press story earlier this week, was a foreign agent working for the Russians and was your campaign manager. Obama didn't do that. You did that. Obama didn't make you repeal his health care plan. You did that. That's actually what's sinking your poll numbers more than anything else. And by the way, if you want context, he says, oh my God, the job numbers were a mess when I came in. Oh, really? Unemployment rate when Obama left office was 4.7%. Under 5% is considered actually pretty good. Well, let's be fair though. How about when Obama took office? What did George Bush leave him with? Oops, 7.8%. You see, that's a mess. Obama brought it down, brought unemployment down from 7.8 to 4.7%. You know who leaves messes behind? Republicans do. How about the deficit? Is that a mess? Well, right now, in Obama's last year, we had a $587 billion deficit. That looks pretty bad. I understand that, right? Well, so let's look at context. What was the deficit that Obama inherited from Bush? Oops, $800 billion. So Obama brought down the average yearly deficit from $800 to $587 billion. So if you want to blame anyone, you should blame the former Republican president, George W. Bush. Okay, and then finally, my favorite quote. When challenged on all of this, he said, hey, look, in the meantime, I guess I can't be doing so badly because I'm the president and you're not. What a child. What a dunce. I'm rubber and you're glue and it bounces off me and it sticks on you. What kind of a third grader are you? It's actually an embarrassment to third graders to put you in the same category as them. He's a reporter. He didn't run for president. And I get it. I get it. You have this hubris. Oh, I got these big crowds and I beat Hillary Clinton. who, by the way, is now sitting at a 35% approval rating. That was a very, very low bar to clear. Yes, the Democrats are an absolute mess. That part is true. But beating them was not a big prize. It was not the hardest thing in the world to do in the current state that they're in, right? But he doesn't get that. He thinks it's because he's fantastic. He's tremendous. So he looks at a reporter, he's telling I'm the president, not you. I got you. If Obama said any of this stuff, if he whined about what Bush left behind, they would have said, oh my God, it's your responsibility. You're the president. You're supposed to fix it. Why don't you go have a beer summit with the Republicans? It's all your fault. If he said things like, I read things in articles. I read it in the National Enquirer. Can you imagine if Obama said, it's okay, I read it in the National Enquirer. The world would have exploded. If Obama said to turn to any, like imagine he turned to a Fox News host and said, oh yeah, I'm the president, not you. Everybody would have lost their minds. We've gotten used to what a complete and utter child our president is. But we shouldn't be used to it, because he's the most powerful man on earth. And he has no idea what he's doing. All right, now let me go on to the Democrats, who aren't much better. Well, they lost to him, so by definition, they're slightly worse, at least electorally. Okay. Now, the Democrats claim that they've got plans. I haven't seen them yet. Still looking out for them. How are they going to block Neil Gorsuch? They've asked a couple of grazing questions here and there. Franken had a good question. The White House did. But overall, not much effect. How are they going to block any of Trump's proposals? Don't know. Hey, you got killed in all these elections. What are you going to do to change? That's a very important question. What are you going to do to change? Because I don't think they got it through the thick heads that they need to change. They lost the White House to the most unpopular person who has ever run for president. They lost the House, they lost the Senate, they lost the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was theirs. They had a year to get somebody through. They were so wildly incompetent. You don't think I know the Republicans fought them? Of course they fought them. It's your job to fight back. And when you have the law and the Constitution on your side, you're supposed to win. Instead, they turned that advantage into historic electoral losses. They are a deeply incompetent party. They lost 69 out of 99 state legislatures. How much worse could their record be? So when Anderson Cooper asked Nancy Pelosi about those Democratic losses, let's see what her answer is.
Hillary Clinton did not win the election, but a respected leader. But we have leaders for all different aspects of it. The Democratic Party is a congressional party, and we have leaders in Congress. It is a gubernatorial party, and leaders.
But on the state level, it is a party which has suffered tremendous losses in the last couple of years.
It has, but we have a plan to address that.
So there's not one standard bearer for that you see as the leader of the Democratic
Party. We're not in a presidential time.
Okay, two different parts of that. One is who is the Democratic leader. I actually don't care about that much. Look, it has a very clear answer. Who is the single most popular politician in the country? Well, the polling indicates that it's Bernie Sanders. Now, that's the same Bernie Sanders that the Democratic establishment did their best to torpedo. They're the ones who made sure that they all backed Hillary Clinton. They all were against Bernie Sanders. Well, are you ever going to admit you were wrong, Nancy Pelosi? Democratic leadership, are any of you going to come out and say, our bad? Now, Bernie Sanders at a 61% approval rating, Hillary Clinton's at a 35% approval rating, Trump's at a 37% approval rating. Oops. We should have backed Bernie Sanders. We should have backed a populist progressive agenda. You're never going to admit that, because you're never going to go in that direction, because you work for your donors. That's who you work for. Just say it. Say it already. Okay? So when they ask her who's the leader, the answer is obvious. The most popular guy is Bernie Sanders. But she doesn't give that answer. What's the first person she said? Hillary Clinton. She said, well, Hillary Clinton lost, but you know, Hillary Clinton. Are you kidding me? We're still even having a conversation about the name Hillary Clinton. And then there are congressional leaders. Who, you? Are you the leader? Act like a leader. Where are you leading the Democratic Party? Nancy Pelosi, what is your vision for the Democratic Party? What is Chuck Schumer's vision for the Democratic Party? Does anybody know? I don't think they know. Bernie Sanders has a vision. So he said it about a million times. We want universal health care. We want free education for kids. Why? We want money out of politics. Why do we want all these things? So that we can live the American dream, so that everyone has opportunity. But the Democrats, they don't like to talk about that. All they like to talk about is Russia, 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 because it's easy. That way they don't have to talk about economic issues. Secondly, they said, what's your plan? She says, well, we have one. What are you waiting on? Congresswoman Pelosi, what are you waiting on? What is this, like a secret plan like Trump had? Oh, ISIS, believe me, when I get into office, my plan is going to be so fantastic, it's going to make your head spin, right? Where's your plan, Democrats? They don't have one. Their plan is to keep on taking donor money, keep on trying to use Bernie Sanders as a mascot, and do the same old tricks they've been doing forever, and keep on losing like they've been doing forever. Well, we don't accept that non-plan, and we're going to challenge you on it. Look, I think the right answer is Justice Democrats. That is a progressive populist wing of the Democratic Party. It was launched recently. It's already raised over $1 million in only small donations. You're not allowed to take corporate money. You're not allowed to take PAC money. We're going to have real people run for these seats. And the Democrats hate that. The establishment Democrats, oh, please, real people running against us. We are mighty establishment politicians from Washington. Don't you know your role? Bow your head to our secret plans. We don't bow our head. We don't accept it. We will primary you because it is obvious you have no plan at all and an enormous track record of failure, and we're tired of it. That's not so the Democrats will lose. That's what their friends in the mainstream media talk about that all the time. Like, oh my God, real progressives and real people? I guess they want the Democrats to lose. No! You're the ones who want Democrats to lose because all you've ever given them is losses. We want progressives to actually win and beat Republicans. You can't beat Republicans, so why don't you step aside, because you don't actually have a secret plan. You want to see the Justice Democrats plan? It's right there, justicedemocrats.com. Go read the platform. It takes you 10 seconds to sign up. Be a part of the Justice Democrats. Participate in any way you want. But whatever you do, don't rely on a non-existent secret plan by the Democratic establishment, because it doesn't exist. JusticeDemocrats.com. Okay. Now, speaking of Bernie, let me give you one more story on Bernie. Now, this is a simple story with just one quote from Bernie Sanders. A little bit earlier this month, they asked him if the Democratic Party had a vision, had a message, had an idea where they want to go. And he gave a devastating quote that I loved, I think you're going to love, and I think is unfortunately perfectly emblematic of where the current Democratic Party stands. He said, you're asking a good question, and I can't give you a definitive answer. Isn't that sad? He says, certainly there are some people in the Democratic Party who want to maintain the status quo. They would rather go down with the Titanic so long as they have first class seats. Damn. That is exactly right. That goes to the core of the corporatist establishment Democrats. Because if you're a Democratic consultant and you're making millions of dollars from TV ads, but your candidates are losing, what do you care? You keep getting jobs. You get one candidate after another. You keep getting rehired. At least on the Republican side, if you don't get results, the Koch brothers will fire you. On the Democratic side, failure is rewarded over and over and over again. And they all work for their donors. So of course they don't have an economic plan. Of course they don't have a plan for the American people. All they have is, well, we might be going down, but I've got first class seats on the Titanic. Enjoy those seats. You might want to rearrange some of those seats on the deck. It might be the last thing you do politically. Now, Bernie has his own plan. Go to Our Revolution to check that out. And of course, we love this fight during the primaries, and we love his fight going forward, and he's fought for those ideas for 40 years. There's also a Justice Democrats. So which one you want to support? You want to support both? Fantastic. JusticeDemocrats.com are going to run real Americans, and we're going to go for real change. And if the Democratic Party doesn't like it, they can go ahead and step aside. But one other thing I got from this quote, Bernie Sanders is basically beginning to realize, Yeah, they want you for the rallies. Yes, they want you for your popularity. But at the end of the day, they are never going to do his populist agenda. Because these Democrats who are the establishment are not populists. They're not. They're the guys who take those corporate donations and pretty much do exactly what those donors tell them to do. They're never going to be populist because they're not paid to be. So that is a losing agenda that has lost the White House, the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and 69 out of 99 state legislatures. Have I mentioned that before? Well, if you're going to be losers like that, please do us the favor of stepping aside, because we prefer not to hit the iceberg. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. So I've got a ton of tweets for you. I got a ton of stories. Let's get going. First of all, a lot of you guys were excited about the new contributors that we hired. Thank you for doing that, being excited about it. We appreciate it. Thank you for making it happen. As you might be able to tell from my voice and my cough, I am sick, but I'm out here trying to bring you the news anyway. Let's go to Kimberly Colbert. She says, never thought I would fangirl about reporters, but I did. Welcome David Sirota, Dylan Radigan, and Jonathan Larson. The Mad Lib says, LOL, Jordan didn't just break the Donna Brazile story. He broke Donna Brazile. Too strong, TYT. Mara QT says, I whispered of a dream. Whoop, whoop. Welcome, new hashtag TYT live reporters / contributors. Tom Zawaki says, what the hell is Cenk Uygur going to do with the next 500,000? Bring back Huntley and Brinkley from the dead? Only way he could top this. Damn. Guys, by the way, so now it's 1509. And let me tell you something. When we get to, thank you, Edwin, appreciate it. when we get to 2 million, we're done. So whatever comes first, whether it's the first 100 days of the Trump administration or the 2 million, and we're done with this campaign. So, I mean, how many more people can we hire? What have we hired? 8 so far? But let's get there. Let's get to 2 million. Yes, we will try to outdo ourselves for the next round. And you guys should be super proud of the people, not we hired, but you hired. TYTnetwork.com/go. And one last tweet about the story of the woman whose husband got deported. Nate Croker says, yes, I feel sorry for the wife the same way I feel sorry for anyone with a conservative ideology. They don't get it. And by the way, you can vote in that poll about whether you should feel sorry for or not at TYTnetwork.com/remorse. Okay, by the way, just quick thank you to the people funding the journalism drive. $50 from Adrian in Washington, $50 from Spencer in Georgia, and $127 from Claude in Texas. And you're going to miss me saying that soon. There's only about 35 days left of the campaign, or less if we get to 2 million quicker. All right, let me update you on what happened in London. Now we have an update on who committed the terrorist attack in London. It was 52-year-old Khalid Massoud. Here's a picture of him on a stretcher. Of course, since we're decent human beings, they tried to save his life nonetheless, even though he killed 4 people. But he wound up dying. He was shot as he was trying to attack other police officers. More importantly, let me show you his victims. Yes, one of them was American. Kurt Cochran, 54, of Bountiful, Utah. Every one of these stories breaks your heart. They were there for the 25th anniversary. He was there with his wife, Melissa. She's also in the hospital. She was hurt badly. He's passed away. And they were going to leave on Thursday. This happened on Wednesday. And, you know, look, it's hard not to, I don't empathize more with them because they're Americans. I believe in humanity, and I feel sick about all the British people who were killed, and Spanish and French who were hurt, etc., all the people that were hurt in this. But as you look at it, you think, well, I've been exactly where they were with my wife. And Kurt is there on the right. Okay, now the other people that were killed there, teacher Aisha Freda, she's 43 years old. She's a Spanish teacher in London. She was going home to her 2 kids when she was murdered. And then police constable Keith Palmer, he's 48. He's also got kids. He's also married, or was, and now he's deceased. Now, let me tell you more about what happened here. 5 people were killed in the Theresa May is calling this sick and depraved terror attack, including a police officer who was stabbed and his assailant, while dozens more were injured. 29 people were still receiving treatment at hospitals across the city, with 5 in critical condition. Victims hailed from countries including Romania, South Korea, Poland, Germany, Ireland, and the US, May said. She's, of course, the Prime Minister of the UK. Among the injured were 3 police officers who had been on their way back from a commendation ceremony, and several French students. They were young, very young students who were run over by his car. First he did the car attack, and then he did the knife attack when he got out of the car. So now there's a hunt on for people who might have helped him, so let's tell you about that. Armed police launched a late night raid on a second floor flat above a row of shops on Hagley Road in Birmingham. Witnesses have said 3 people were taken away by police. In fact, more details, authorities arrested 3 women and 5 men overnight in raids across the country, searching for details on the assault. But they say that he, in fact, did act alone. Now, these stories changed a little bit. We're still very early on in this story. We'll see if he did have co-conspirators. The 8 that were taken in are not necessarily co-conspirators. They might be just talking to them about information. So let me tell you more about Massoud. Police said Khalid Massoud, 52, had previously been convicted on a variety of charges, but none were related to terrorism. Massoud, a British citizen from Kent, had not been under investigation in recent years. More details on that. Massoud was not the subject of any active investigations, police said, but in the past he had been convicted for assault and possession of offensive weapons. His first conviction in 1983 was for criminal damage. His most recent was in December 2003 for possession of a knife. Now, he also had extreme ideological points of view, but that is a person, when you have extreme ideological positions and you have been arrested before, even if it goes dates back to 2003 and 1983, is a person that makes sense to track, and the British were in fact tracking him, but he just had not committed a crime in a long time, and he did not communicate, as far as they could tell, with anyone abroad or any other terrorist group. That's why they didn't catch him. And so these lone wolf attacks are the ones that are the hardest to stop. As Theresa May explains, the case was historic, the case on Massoud. He was not part of the current intelligence picture. Now, was ISIS responsible? And that's a question that's almost always asked in these situations. ISIS claimed responsibility for the attack, referring to Massoud as, quote, a soldier of the militant group, but it was unclear to what extent the organization was involved, Huffington Post reports. Authorities said earlier on Thursday that they believed Massoud was inspired by terrorism abroad, but acted alone. So now they've got different distinctions for, were you directed by ISIS or inspired by ISIS? Now, I think that gives ISIS too much power. If he was directly directed by ISIS and there's communication to that effect, then you should say ISIS did it. But if he was quote unquote inspired by ISIS, you're giving ISIS too much power to say anyone who does something like this is because of them, and they feel great about that. They get publicity out of that, and they get possibly more fighters and more lone wolf attacks based on that. This now copies a common theme we've unfortunately seen all over Europe now with, look, in France and Germany, truck attacks killed nearly 100 people in 2016. And there was an attack near the Canadian Parliament that was very similar to this a couple of years ago as well. So I hope that our coverage does not encourage these people by making them out to be and part of ISIS, like almost playing into ISIS propaganda by saying that they were soldiers or inspired by ISIS, because they're not soldiers. It's nothing that honorable or with any degree of glory. It's a guy who ran over a teacher who was going to take care of her 2 kids at home. You know, all the people who were injured, innocent people, they didn't do any of the actions that, I don't know what he was mad about. I can guess a couple of things, but even if you're justifiably angry about the foreign policy of any of these countries, well, those folks didn't do it. That lady who came over from Spain and taught Spanish in London, that guy from Utah, they didn't do it. And so to run them over and to kill them and to murder them is of course not the right answer. This is of course a terrorist attack. All I'm saying is you're unfortunately, by attributing everything to ISIS, And it doesn't matter, what difference does it make? It's a terrorist attack either way. By attributing to ISIS, you're unfortunately helping them to grow a little bit. So that's why I take some issue with how it's covered. But let's get to the more important points, which is how people have reacted. So let me show you a picture from London. And I love this. Everybody came out and said, not only was it a remembrance, but basically a message that we are not afraid, we are not bowed, and we like our open democratic society, and we are going to keep it, and you're not going to change a damn thing about it. And then there's, of course, another one here, and you could find this all over social media. That's a guy in a Union Jack jacket that is next to the sweatshirt, I should say, holding a flag and lighting a candle at the vigil in Trafalgar Square. And then Sadiq Khan, who is the London mayor, said, "Londoners will never be cowed by terrorism. Those evil and twisted individuals who try to destroy our shared way of life will never succeed, and we condemn them." But my favorite quote is actually from Jane McCallion. She's a B2B editor, and she said, "If the Nazis dropping bombs every night didn't stop this city, one man certainly won't." So if you're this guy or any terrorist and you thought you were going to intimidate London, you picked the wrong city. Okay, now let's go to local politics here back at home. So Devin Nunes is the Republican head of the Intelligence Committee in the House. He was also on Trump's transition team. Now they're conducting a so-called independent investigation of Donald Trump. Well, that's kind of uncomfortable. He seems to have a bit of a conflict of interest there. Well, if he at least carries out his job independently as he's supposed to do, perhaps he can get beyond that conflict of interest. Is he principled enough to do that? Well, we found out yesterday when he came out to the press and said this.
"Today I briefed the president on the concerns that I had about incidental collection and how it relates to President-elect Trump and his transition team and the concerns that I have. And lastly, I'll say that the reports that I was able to see did not have anything to do with Russia or the Russia investigation or any tie to the Trump team. What I've read bothers me, and I think it should bother the president himself and his team, because I think some of it seems to be inappropriate. But like I said, until we get all the information to the committee, it's hard to really say until we see it in its totality. This is information that was brought to me that I thought the president needed to know about incidental collection, where the president himself and others in the Trump transition team were clearly put into intelligence reports that ended up at this White House and across a whole bunch of other agencies. And I thought it was important for the president to know this."
So there are two different issues here. One is the incidental collection. There, I agree with him, it's somewhat disturbing. So let me explain. So the FISA courts allow you to track foreigners, for example, the Russian ambassador, right? And we listen in on their calls. But when they're talking to Americans, we're supposed to mask the identity of the Americans. Now, a lot of times they don't mask them or they unmask them. They're not supposed to do that, but they do that. And that apparently, if you believe Nunes, happened to some of the Trump transition team. Now remember, he was on the executive committee of the transition team, so that might affect him personally. He says it was not about the Russians, and he says that it was perfectly legal, but it's still disturbing. I agree with him that that's disturbing. We've been saying through the Bush years, the Obama years, and now the Trump years, that yeah, of course they unmask them. They tell us every time that we ask them, oh no, we don't unmask the Americans, and we never pry in on any American conversations without a court order. Yeah, except sometimes they do, just like in this case. So I'm glad that that is exposed. Now the second part of this is that, what are you doing? You're the person who's supposed to be independently investigating Trump. He just did a press conference announcing to Trump what happened inside the independent investigation of Trump. That's insane. Well, then you can't run that investigation, and you're certainly not independent. Okay, can you answer that? Well, let's see his answer to it.
find it important then to brief the press and then the president before even the ranking member?
Just a judgment call. I mean, you know, it was my there was a lot going on yesterday, and it was a judgment call on my part. And that's, at the end of the day, that's, you know, sometimes you make the right decision, sometimes you make the wrong one, but you got to stick by the decisions you make.
No, not really. If you made the wrong one, you can say, yeah, that was a bad call. And was it a bad call? Of course. Now everybody's saying, what did you do? You didn't even check with the rest of the Intelligence Committee. So now today goes to the Intelligence Committee, and according to Representative Jackie Speier, he gave a generic apology, like, oh, I guess if anything went wrong. Yeah, something went wrong. You didn't even tell your own committee, and you went and ran and told the guy you were supposed to be investigating. Yes, you can make a decision that was not the right call. So now, of course, Trump loves it, and because he said, oh, Obama was wiretapping him. Now, that's not what Nunes said, but he is revealing that some in the Trump campaign were incidentally listened in on. So what do you think Trump's going to do with that? Here's what he's going to do with it.
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do. I very much appreciated the fact that they found what they found, but I somewhat do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. So this is wonderful political cover, even though it isn't really what Trump was saying. It's good enough political cover for him, and he's like, thank you very much, Nunes, mission accomplished. Now, others point out this is horrific, including Republicans. First, let me go to MSNBC security analyst Jeremy Besh, who worked as senior counsel for these kind of committees before. He said the job of the committee is to do oversight of the executive branch, not to bring them into their investigation or to tip them off to things they may be looking at. I've got to believe that other members of the committee are horrified at what they just witnessed. This is a chairman that's supposed to be doing impartial, bipartisan investigations of the president's inner circle, and instead, he basically goes and tells the president and his team everything he knows. Disaster. And he's not the only one saying that. John McCain said now there needs to be an independent select committee, because these guys obviously aren't up to the job. Remember, John McCain, it's a Republican that sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee. It's the head of that committee. And he said that he no longer does the Congress have the credibility to handle this alone. And I don't say that lightly. So McCain is saying the investigation now can't be handled by Republicans in Congress because they're apparently so biased that they'll botch it like this. It needs to go to someone independent. I don't know if the Republicans will actually allow that, but that is a significant step. So if Nunes thought he was trying to help his boss, Donald Trump, that wasn't his job. Trump is not his boss. He was supposed to be investigating him, and he hasn't helped anyone, most especially Americans who actually want to get to the bottom of this. Okay, last story for you guys in this so-called hour. Okay. Now, this is an interesting story on a couple of counts. One, it's the Koch brothers versus Donald Trump. Ooh, who's going to win? Well, for the moment being, I have an answer for you. That's at the end of the story. Secondly, it's interesting because the donors have become so brazen that they're basically flaunting the bribes they have for politicians out in public. Before, they used to be a little embarrassed that they would do it, you know, subtly. They would do it when privately and in the dark. Now they just come out and tell the press. So CNN is reporting the advocacy groups helmed by Charles and David Koch have unveiled a new pool of money for advertisements, field programs, and mailings that would exclude those who vote for the health care bill they oppose on Thursday. The effort, which they described as worth millions of dollars, is an explicit warning to the on-the-fence Republicans from one of the most influential players in electoral politics not to cross them. Okay, but they're going to get more specific. So the Koch brothers have an umbrella organization that feeds into all these different so-called think tanks. They're not thinking about a damn thing. They do exactly as the Koch brothers tell them to do, and the Koch brothers do this based on almost purely their own business interests. It ain't about freedom. It isn't about any kind of conservative ideology. It's like, it's obviously about how am I going to get bigger tax cuts because that's going to save me billions of dollars. How am I going to get deregulation because that's going to save my industry's money. But they don't like Trump on a couple of counts. One, on the healthcare bill, as draconian as it is, they don't think it's draconian enough. And they don't like on the trade wars that he's threatening because it affects their other business interests. So they send out their cronies, in this case, Tim Phillips, who's the president for Americans for Prosperity. Well, that group is at least somewhat honestly labeled. They're like, we're for the prosperous and not for you. Anyway, Tim Phillips says, we want to make certain that lawmakers understand the policy consequences of voting for a law that keeps Obamacare intact. Now, does Trump care really keep Obamacare intact? Of course not. That's a preposterous thing to say. 25 million people are going to lose their health insurance. But according to the Koch brothers, no, not right wing enough. I want it more decimated so I could have further tax cuts for the rich. So then Tim Phillips says, we have a history of following up and holding politicians accountable. But we will also be there to support and thank the champions who stand strong and keep their promise. Now, if this wasn't backed up by money, you say, look, I'm going to help the guys I like and not help and hurt the guys that vote against me. I get it. But here they just announced they have a new multi-million dollar fund. And then they come out and say, yeah, we are going to give you a ton of money if you vote with us. And if you don't vote with us on healthcare, we won't give you the money. You know, Americans have a word for that. It's called bribery. But the Supreme Court made it legal. They say, oh, yeah. They're just, money is speech. They're just talking to them. The Koch brothers are just having a conversation with the congressman and saying, you'll either get millions of dollars or you won't get millions of dollars. Bribery? What name so? I don't know what you're talking about. No, those are just honest, independent expenditures. That's just speech. The rest of us know this, but the establishment in Washington looks at this and thinks it's business as usual. That's why we're sick of Washington. Now, CNN explains the group of high power donors plans to spend between $300 and $400 million on political projects over the 2018 cycle. So that is an awful lot of money to have at their disposal and to be able to deliver those bribes to those politicians who vote in the ways that help the Koch brothers. Now, those bribes might have been legalized, but they are still bribes. Now, if you're thinking, well, maybe CNN took them out of context or something. No, they retweeted CNN's story just to make sure everybody knows, hey, we weren't kidding and we are threatening you. And yes, we will give you the money if you vote our way. And Tim Phillips then went to other outlets, including Talking Points memo, quoting him as saying, members of Congress know how serious we take a vote like this. And then they also went to Politico. They went to everywhere. Here's James Davis, Freedom Partners, Executive Vice President, another Koch group. Network organizations, meaning the Koch brothers network, will stand with principled lawmakers who will oppose the House healthcare proposal. So, well, now that we know where the bribes are going, what was the result? The Republicans were supposed to have a vote today. You know what happened? No vote. Oops. Looks like the Koch brothers won this round. Now, I want to be clear on what they wanted. So, let's go to an explanation now from Huffington Post. The House Freedom Caucus has negotiated with the White House. That's the Freedom Caucus is the more right-wing guys, the guys that the Koch brothers like. Negotiated with the White House on potentially eliminating essential health benefits and some unknown provisions in Title I of the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. That expansive section of the 2010 health care law Republicans are trying to repeal includes provisions requiring coverage for people with pre-existing conditions and allowing young adults to remain under a parent's plan until they're 26 years old. So the Koch brothers have said, no, you will keep no part of Obamacare. Yes, the rich are going to get a $600 billion tax break, even under the new health care plan. Yes, 25 million people will lose their insurance. Yes, senior citizens will have to pay a lot more, but it's still not enough. Make sure you go hit the young. And the people that are under 26, they're living with their parents. No, they can't have their parents' insurance anymore. You got a pre-existing condition, your problem, not my problem. Then the Koch brothers have the audacity to contribute to things like cancer research. Then if you got cancer though, and it's a pre-existing condition, sorry, you're not gonna get health insurance. Go out there and die in the streets, because I need more tax breaks. But they won today. And finally, here's a description of what happened. The president's vaunted deal-making skills have failed him so far. He didn't pick up any new support by offering to eliminate essential health benefits from the bill, but instead lost a wave of moderates and made the measure more politically toxic than it had been. So now this is ironic. Trump finds himself in the same position as Obama. Trump is now finding out there is no appeasing the Koch brothers. There's no appeasing the Freedom Caucus. There's no appeasing the extreme right wingers. Now, they're so right wing, they're now making Trump look moderate. I mean, he is nowhere near moderate, and this healthcare plan is an absolute disaster. But they're even further right of him, and no matter how much he concedes to them, just like Obama, he's found out there's never enough concessions. So he says, okay, maybe we'll kill pre-existing conditions, even though they're incredibly popular, and he still doesn't have their vote. It's never enough. The greed of the Republican donors is endless. There is no bottom to that. So and on top of that, now he's lost the moderates, because they're like, I'm running in Pennsylvania and other swing states, and you're telling me I'm going to take away the one part of the rule that everybody loves, pre-existing conditions, and I'm going to throw 25 million people out of health insurance and all the, and we're going to cut Medicaid. And when you said we wouldn't cut Medicaid, we're going to get killed out there. So right now there is no deal. I know Trump thinks he's a great deal maker. No, the deal that he proposed actually got neither side to work with him. So what they have on their hands right now is an absolute mess. Because at the end of the day, the one thing that Republican politicians listen to most is their donors. Lesson learned, Young Turks.